This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Florida begins to recover. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Tuesday, September 12. Glad you're with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
In the wake of Irma, millions are waiting for power to be restored, and residents of the Keys who evacuated can't return just yet, plus further damage in South Carolina.
In Washington, a Supreme Court justice has stepped in to temporarily preserve the refugee ban put in place by the Trump administration.
The United Nations Security Council has approved tougher sanctions on North Korea, but not the full amount requested by the U.S.
And the things kids need to keep in mind as they come up to their first tests of the new school year.
The fallback strategies that many students use with all the best intentions, as rereading the text, highlighting their notes, going over and over the material for long marathon sessions, they think the more effort they put in, the better they'll do. This is not necessarily true.
Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenbarger on how to better prepare for quizzes and tests. She's here in about 20 minutes. Well, Hurricane Irma affected nearly every mile of Florida, but the state's coasts were largely spared from the catastrophe that many feared. From Miami to Naples to Tampa, many Floridians said they felt lucky. But Florida officials still warned of a long recovery after the massive storm barreled up the entire peninsula. Eric Szilagyi, president of Florida Power and Light, says restoring electricity may take weeks.
There's a lot of tree damage out there. There's a lot of debris that we have to remove before we can actually even start to get the lines back up and the substations back in power and make sure that we can turn the lights on.
The Wall Street Journal says the massive scale of the outages left some two dozen nursing homes and 54 hospitals relying on backup generators. The Keys, where Irma made landfall with Category 4 strength, appeared to bear the worst, with water, power, and sewer services knocked out. Mobile homes were overturned, boats piled on top of each other. Governor Rick Scott.
DOT is working hard to clear the roads and inspect the bridges all across the state. We need to, DOT to inspect the bridges before people go back to these barrier islands and places like that.
More than 350 miles to the north, downtown Jacksonville was dealing with record and historical flooding from the St. Johns River. Well, after crossing Florida, Irma caused flooding as far north as downtown Charleston, South Carolina. At least a million customers in South Carolina and Georgia lost power. Tropical storm force winds of up to 72 miles an hour hit South Carolina, leaving hundreds of thousands without power. Charleston recorded its third highest storm surge with nearly 10 feet of water pushing a mile inland. Warnings from Governor Henry McMaster.
There's no need to put yourself, your family, or the safety of the first responders at risk during this dangerous storm. So we're asking everyone, especially along the coast, to stay inside even after it stops raining.
That 10 feet of water, by the way, that's about 4 feet above a typical high tide and surpassed the destructive surge caused by Hurricane Matthew last October. It ranked behind only Hurricane Hugo in 1989 and a hurricane from back in 1940. Another 2 to 4 inches of rain could fall in that area. At one point yesterday, CBS News says flooding and downed trees closed more than 160 roads in 10 South Carolina counties. Let's get an update now from Nigel Holderby, national spokeswoman for the American Red Cross. She's a veteran of 3 hurricanes and is with us from Orlando this morning. Nigel, good morning. What are you seeing in Central Florida where you are?
We are here in Orlando at the staging where hundreds of volunteers were coming in before Irma made landfall. And now those volunteers, we've ridden out the storm here, and we're really still continuing to support the operations that with those volunteers, we were able to open the evacuation centers where overnight an estimated 132,000 people, and that was on the 10th overnight, those And I'm so sorry. Let me start that one over.
Okay.
Overnight, an estimated 132,000 people sought refuge in more than 510 of these Red Cross evacuation centers that are supported by Red Cross and in partnership with the government.
My goodness. How many sites do you have there in the Orlando area?
So there are over 460 of these evacuation centers in the Florida area. And so with just the Florida piece, there were about 127,000 people, and that is just a very small footprint of what the American Red Cross is working with right now.
Mm. All right, so you guys, are you set up in schools? I know there are sports arenas in the Orlando area. What's going on?
So with our evacuation centers, what we're working on is how we partner with the local emergency managers. You know, that's really where the decisions are made. And so we do have several different evacuation center styles. We have the schools that are so generous to open their doors in the community, to be there whenever they're, when their community is in need. So these buildings look different in each one of the communities, and they're really chosen based on their ability to house large numbers of people, their ability to withstand the types of storms we're looking at. So we work with those buildings that are rated for those, like this one with being the in anticipation of the storm being, you know, category 4 or 5, there were decisions made based on that size of the storm and what we needed to keep people safe.
Mm. We're speaking with Nigel Holderby, national spokesperson for the American Red Cross, with us from Orlando early this morning. Did you find that people were showing up to your shelters prepared, or did some of them just have the clothes on their back, maybe with pets in tow? What'd you see?
So there are lots of different levels of preparedness that we've seen throughout this situation. One of the most interesting things to me is that as an organization who talks about preparedness, that is what we say, you know, all year long. We talk to people about being prepared. September is National Preparedness Month,
yeah.
And that's one of the things every year we say, whenever you would have to evacuate your home, here's what you need and here's how you need to be prepared to do that. And what we saw in this situation here with Irma and even with Harvey were that people are preparing. They're, you know, they're bringing water, they're bringing items for their pets. And yes, in this situation with our response here, no one was turned away. We had an area where pets were able to be and that they were safe and taken care of. People were bringing things that they might need, leashes, carrying cages, food for their animals, but then also bringing water and food and their comfort items for themselves. I ran into a family here who was sitting at one of the tables with their small children, and they had crayon books, you know, they were coloring and reading, and they had prepared in advance to keep their children occupied so that they wouldn't get nervous or scared. Just a beautiful time when a lot of the things that we're seeing and stories that we're hearing from our volunteers who call us. I have a lady from Oklahoma, and she was sending me photos and telling me stories of the children that were playing together and making new friends.
Thanks, Nigel. Nigel Holderby, national spokeswoman for the American Red Cross. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending some time with us. We're coming to you today from the Dell studios. Need help finding the right Dell PCs with Intel Core processors for your business? Call 877-BUY-DELL to talk to a Dell small business tech advisor. The United Nations Security Council has unanimously adopted new sanctions against North Korea after U.S. officials eased their demands in an effort to get the approval of China and Russia. The U.S., which wanted the harshest possible sanctions yet because of Pyongyang's persistent tests of missiles and nukes, dialed back its initial insistence on a complete oil embargo and asset and travel freezes, according to the Wall Street Journal. Despite the compromises, U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley said the resolution would reduce the fuel available for North Korea by 30%.
These are by far the strongest measures ever imposed on North Korea. They give us a much better chance to halt the regime's ability to fuel and finance its nuclear and missile programs.
Also, major U.S. allies in Asia welcomed the unanimous vote, with North Korea's profitable textile exports now banned and fuel supplies capped after its sixth
nuclear test. Yesterday's decision was the ninth sanctions resolution unanimously adopted by the UN Security Council since 2006 over North Korea's ballistic missile and nuclear programs. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, aid is rushing into hurricane-scarred Florida as residents begin to dig out. An official slowly pieced together the scope of Irma's vicious path of destruction across the peninsula. Even as glimmers of hope emerge from parts of the state forecasters once worried would be razed by the storm, it appears that parts of the Florida Keys were devastated. Homeland Security Advisor Tom Bossert.
Because the storm's still ongoing, our priority is life-saving, life-sustaining. Jacksonville and the Keys are taking a considerable amount of our attention right now.
In Jacksonville, police rescued residents from waist-deep water as the St. Johns River rose to levels unseen since 1846. Millions remain without power as the storm makes its way through Georgia and the Carolinas. In Havana, the historic but decrepit buildings were no match for Hurricane Irma's winds and rainfall as many collapsed. At least 10 people have been killed, making it Cuba's worst hurricane death toll since 16 died in Hurricane Dennis in 2005. Members of the president's legal team became concerned about Jared Kushner's ongoing role in the White House after they were made aware of his June 2016 meeting with Donald Trump Jr. and a Russian lawyer. The Wall Street Journal reports that one scenario the lawyers considered was recommending Kushner be fired, but it doesn't appear that any consensus was reached, nor is it clear whether the recommendation was presented to the president. Kushner has acknowledged four meetings with Russian officials and business people during the campaign. The CDC is investigating an outbreak of a bacterial infection linked to puppies sold through the national pet store chain Petland. The outbreak has sickened 39 people from seven states, including Florida, Missouri, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. So far, nine people have been hospitalized. No deaths have been reported. And when a monkey takes a selfie, who owns the rights to it? That litigious question has been answered, at least in one case. PETA attorneys representing a monkey that took a photographer's camera and took a picture of itself have agreed to a compromise in the case where they had asserted that the animal owned the copyright to the picture. The photographer has agreed to donate 25% of any future revenue from the images to charities dedicated to protecting the monkeys in Indonesia.
The PETA argued that the animal owned the copyright to the picture.
Yes.
Even after it had stolen the camera.
Yes.
Come on here.
I know. We could have slapped the monkey with some kind of charge.
Did the monkey take the stand in this? I mean, 23 minutes after the hour. Thanks for joining us. Welcome into Tuesday. There are a handful of ways students can better prepare themselves for tests in this new academic year. Here's Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenberger. Sue, I needed this stuff decades ago.
The fallback strategies that many students use with all the best intentions, as rereading the text, highlighting their notes, going over and over the material for long marathon sessions, they think the more effort they put in, the better they'll do. This is not necessarily true. New studies show that the people who get the highest grades or rising grades aren't necessarily the ones who are studying the longest. They're just studying smarter than other students.
What does it mean, Sue, to study smarter?
They plan ahead to make time to study so that they don't do one marathon session. They break it into chunks of, say, 45 minutes or so to ensure the maximum efficiency, so you're really focusing. They quiz themselves repeatedly on the material. This is not fun. Most students avoid it, but taking tests to practice for taking a test is really a good way to study. And they also, interestingly, look ahead and figure out what resources they're going to use. If, for example, you know you're going to have problems with a certain kind of formula in algebra, you make a plan to go in on the instructor's Thursday office hours or join a study group so you can get some help. It's this sort of deliberate, planful approach to studying that marks really expert learners, the researchers say, the people who continue to study high through school on into professional exams.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenberger. Her piece is called Before You Study, Ask for Help. Is there a stigma around asking for help?
There is. Students want to look as though they're in charge of their work and like they have it all handled. It's embarrassing to go to a parent or a teacher or even a tutor and say you're struggling and you have to struggle some more to get it. And also, a lot of times students just don't leave themselves time. You know, they may put off the studying until the professor's office hours are over, the mom and dad are in bed, the learning center is closed, and there are no tutors available. So they really condemn themselves to this sort of isolation.
What do you mean by retrieval practice in your column?
Well, this is something that has been documented really well in a series of excellent studies showing that if you practice retrieving facts and concepts from your memory over and over, you will get better and better at it. Some people use flashcards, others use practice tests. Study groups can do this for each other. In one study, groups of students just wrote questions out and quizzed each other on the questions they wrote from the material that week, and those students got better grades. It's really simple. It's sort of like the difference between looking at an exercise machine and jumping on it and using it. That's the difference between just rereading your notes and actually trying to remember what you're learning.
Thanks, Sue. Wall Street Journal columnist Sue Schellenberger. It is 30 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
Ransomware is software that can infiltrate your business through email, enabling cyber criminals to hijack sensitive information as ransom for your own data's release. Leveraging Barracuda email security with advanced threat detection can stop a ransomware attack in its tracks. As an added measure, Barracuda Backup allows you to recover your data without having to surrender to extortion. Crime doesn't pay when you protect your business data with Barracuda. Go to Barracuda.com/ransomware to learn more.
You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. ThisMorning@CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for spending time with us on this Tuesday, September 12. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: widespread power outages remain in Florida. Flooding hits Jacksonville and Charleston. Multi-network telethon airs tonight at 8 o'clock to help storm victims. UN Security Council approves new sanctions on North Korea. Supreme Court justice temporarily preserves the Trump refugee ban. Apple holds its latest product launch today. Cleveland Indians won their 19th straight, apparently are never losing again. And what to do with pets like goats when there's a storm like Irma. That story in about 20 minutes. Well, Hurricane Irma's turn up the west coast of Florida imperiled a region that has undergone major development in recent decades, from wealthy enclaves such as Naples to middle-class subdivisions in Tampa Bay and nearby Pinellas County. Like many cities in Florida, parts of Tampa are built on filled-in marshland. Many homes, apartment buildings, even a major trauma center are close to sea level. One report found that Tampa is the most vulnerable city in the U.S. to storm surge flooding. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Laura Casisto. Laura, set this up.
Tampa really is one of the hottest housing markets in the U.S. right now. Generally, actually, since the recession, we've seen a lot of markets pretty sluggish building activity. That is not true of Tampa. It's seen one of the largest year-over-year growth in new home permits. And, of course, that's good news in a lot of ways. It's good news for the economy there, but it did mean that the storm hits just that much harder because a huge share of the homes in Tampa are built on this low ground near sea level, and that puts them at risk.
Boy, surely that's taken into consideration, right, when builders put up these homes and buildings, right? I don't know how to build on marshland, but I'm saying surely they've taken into account the potential for hurricanes.
So I think, and this is going to be one of the tests, I mean, we saw this in Houston, right, where a lot of people talked about this. Houston had no zoning, and so you saw stuff in Houston that was built in marshland, and they didn't really take that into account. Certainly in Florida, where they're even more used to hurricanes and to this kind of flooding, you've seen more consideration given to that. You saw stricter building codes put into place after Andrew. But this is going to be, we're really just at the point of now of trying to assess the damage and take stock of what's happened. And this is going to be a real test for whether those were strong enough.
Boy, oh boy. You point out in the story, Tampa posted a 25% increase in new building permits for single-family homes.
Yeah.
First 7 months of this year.
Wow. I mean, that is remarkable under any circumstances, and it's especially remarkable if you look at what's going on around the rest of the country, where we're seeing pretty sluggish, usually single-digit growth in permits. So, I mean, Tampa's on fire, and it makes sense. You've got an aging population. Tampa has very affordable housing. It's really popular with people from the Midwest looking to retire in a state that's low tax, and yeah. Well, usually the weather is a lot better.
Right. Is this the type of thing, though, that can scare people away? All right, home prices are up 10%, you said.
Yeah, for sure. So I talked to a couple of real estate experts there, and there's no question it's going to have an impact. There is a question about just how big that impact is going to be. Because sort of as one of the experts I talked to put it, this is a discretionary purchase. If you're buying a home in Florida, you're almost always, you could live somewhere else. You're not there for a job. You're there because you're retiring or you want a second home. So people don't have to buy there. I think one thing we're likely to see, although, again, we're still sort of assessing the damage, but assuming that some of these newer high-rise buildings fare better, you might see more of a boom in those because those are on higher, those are higher up and usually built to stricter codes. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, but there's no question it has an impact.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal housing reporter Laura Casisto. Her piece is called Building Boom Puts Millions in Irma's Path Following the Storm. Now, explain to some of the property values. I know you mentioned Miami in there and Tampa, Greater Hillsborough County.
So, yeah, I think one thing to mention, I mean, so first of all, no matter what, no matter where a storm hits, it's tragic. We know already there's been some loss of life, but just in terms of narrowly speaking, the question about property damage and how much the damage is going to be, in some ways, the fact that the storm kind of shifted a bit to the west was good news because you see a lot more valuable, expensive real estate in the Miami area along Florida's east coast. So a direct hit there could have been truly destructive. The western coast is generally a little more sparsely populated, tends to be a little more single family homes, a little more subdivisions built around golf courses. All of those are just a little less vulnerable than the sort of towers that are right on the beach. So it means we're likely to see sort of a fraction of we'll still see billions of dollars of damage, but a fraction of the billions that we might have otherwise seen.
Thanks, Laura. Wall Street Journal housing reporter Laura Casisto. It's 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You could follow me directly on Twitter as well, @GordonDeal. Glad you're with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, in case you didn't hear or just straight up forgot, Los Angeles has two football teams now and San Diego has none, with the Chargers leaving their home of over 50 years and moving north to play in a soccer stadium this season. These types of changes can take some time to get used to, however, not just for fans, but for officials too. According to USA Today's For the Win blog, it took less than 4 minutes into last night's Monday Night Football game against the Broncos for referee Terry McCauley to forget which city the Chargers now play for.
Charge timeout, San Diego, prior to the clock expiring.
Twitter users, of course, enjoyed the official slip of the tongue, with some saying that this shows how much the football gods disapprove of the Chargers moving to L.A., while others let McCauley off the hook, tweeting that hardly anyone in L.A. knows the Chargers are there either.
Oh, ouch.
Yeah, the NFL's move back to L.A. has not gone swimmingly so far.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have their new stadiums yet,
right.
So I'm sure things will kind of perk up then, but the first seasons by the new L.A. teams have not gone very well.
I feel badly for the Bolts.
Yeah, and their fans. Again, they were there for over 50 years.
Yeah.
They were there in San Diego. And, I mean, again, they didn't always fill the stadium up, but they had a very sort of rabid fan base there. And when they were doing well, they certainly drew well.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I feel bad for the fans and and for the team. And now they got
Identity crisis now.
They haven't had a home game yet, but they're going to squeeze into a 30,000-seat soccer stadium, which should be interesting.
Well, the views will be great in those small stadiums.
Right.
The views are wonderful.
Exactly.
There's not a bad seat in the house.
You can talk to the guys on the bench.
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
And, Gordon, while cold pizza might make for a tasty breakfast in a pinch, when you pay big bucks for hot gourmet pizza, being served lukewarm to chili slices could be enough to make you want to sue. At least that's the case in New York City, where prosecutors are looking into a pizza festival that that allegedly charged attendees $75 each to eat cold slivers of pizza in a parking lot in Brooklyn on Saturday. The festival was promoted as a celebration of pizza, but attendees say on Facebook they instead got cold slices of pizza smaller than a sample size and served with glasses of warm wine. New York State Attorney General Eric Schneiderman has even gotten involved, urging attendees to file complaints on his website. A spokesman says prosecutors have opened an investigation.
Oh.
You do not want to cross the Brooklyn foodies, Gordon.
Yeah.
That's a section of the population that's going to get you in trouble if you do not live up to standards.
Don't you think, by the way, you need to question where your priorities are if you're paying a $75 entrance fee to get into a pizza fest being held in a parking lot?
Yes. Well, there's that as well.
Right?
Sure. So what you're saying
seems
is perhaps
the
they deserved it? Is that what you're saying? Maybe just a little tiny bit?
You might have gotten what you paid for.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Listen, $20 if you know you're getting a little wine or something, but $75 for a pizza festival? And the thing is, I mean, how much pizza can you eat?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, for the average American, you know, 2-3 slices would probably cover it.
A couple glasses of wine, yeah.
Even if you got loaded slices, right, might run you $3, $3.50. You're coughing up $75?
You're just throwing way too much logic in this argument.
Something funky going on here,
Mike. Serious first world problems.
13 minutes in front of the hour. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
As a small business owner, you make every dollar count. So what could you do with $10? Go to Vistaprint.com today and you'll get 500 high-quality custom business cards for only $9.99. That's less than 2 cents per card. And at Vistaprint, your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. So it's never been easier to turn 500 strangers into connections. Just visit Vistaprint.com and use promo code 2424 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 2424.
8 minutes in front of the hour. On This Morning, Jennifer Kashenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, an aircraft carrier and other Navy ships are on their way to help with search and rescue operations in Florida as a flyover of the hurricane-battered Keys yielded what Governor Rick Scott said were scenes of devastation.
The water is not working, the sewer is not working, and there's no electricity. So it's very tough.
Authorities are struggling to clear the single highway connecting the string of islands to the mainland. This local resident is anxious to get back home.
I've got a chainsaw in my car. We can get down there and start chopping trees. They're letting old citizens and stuff get in because they need to get down there too. But, you know, us young whippersnappers can get down there and, you know, start chopping trees down.
The storm is moving north through Georgia and the Carolinas, where it's causing severe flooding, strong winds, and power outages. North Korea will be feeling the pain of new UN sanctions targeting some of its biggest remaining foreign revenue streams, but the Security Council eased off the biggest target of all, the oil the North needs to stay alive and to fuel its million-man military. U.S. Ambassador to the UN Nikki Haley says the sanctions will still be effective.
When these new stronger sanctions are added to those passed last month, over 90% of North Korea's publicly reported exports are now fully banned.
Also, exports of North Korean textiles are prohibited and other nations are barred from authorizing new work permits for North Korean workers. Pushing toward Republicans' prime goal of tax legislation, the GOP Senate leader and members of the Budget Committee are scrambling to come up with a budget deal to clear the way for the first tax overhaul in 3 decades. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and GOP members of the Budget Committee will meet today with 2 Trump administration officials to plot breaking the budget stalemate. Well, whether we want to see him or not, actor Liam Neeson says he's done making thrillers. The 65-year-old says he won't do any more action movies like Taken because he's simply too old. Neeson says he's still getting serious money thrown at him to do more action films, but he's turning all the offers down.
Is it possible that after you do 15 versions of a movie, there's just no more storylines? Yeah. Good for him. Nice to be in that position. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. While many in the path of Hurricane Irma made sure their cats and dogs were securely tucked in at home or in a pet-friendly shelter, Christine Riley of Tallahassee had different pets to worry about. Aside from her 6 cat rescues, Ms. Riley owns 2 goats. Last year during Hurricane Hermine, goats Heidi and Giselle stayed outdoors in their goat shed, which has a metal roof. But this time, Irma was predicted to be way worse than Hermine, which caused lots of damage throughout Florida's capital city. And years ago, during another storm, her and her husband left the goats aside, outside, and they wound up being attacked by what they suspected was a dog or a coyote. So this time, Ms. Riley brought the goats inside to shelter in her laundry room. She says the goats were not bothered by the pelting rain and howling winds. They were more freaked out by actually being indoors. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.